the show that tases you with liberty. We're talking about real freedom, my friends. Freedom and responsibility, true independence. Michael Dean, regular host, can't be with us tonight. He's single-handedly decorating the Rockefeller Christmas tree. So go enjoy that this Christmas. All thanks to Michael Dean, saving the world. I'm your host tonight, Derek J., and with me tonight is Randy England.
A good Monday morning to you, Derek.
Good Monday morning. How are you, Randy? Are you safe? Have you been contacted by the government?
I'm safe, and we just finished a Sunday, and I usually do not get contacted by the government on weekends.
Typically
so,
not.
Oh, so you do. That makes them especially nice.
Yes, that would be really bad news. And I am also safe, have not been contacted by the government. No warrant canary here tonight, but
no new parking tickets.
No new parking tickets, and I continue to not feed my parking meters. I've got an upcoming parking ticket to challenge. I encourage everyone listening to challenge your parking tickets. Parking is not a crime, and there are other creative, peaceful solutions to solving the complex problem of parking than to send people threats of fines and steal their cars. So take your parking tickets to court. What if you got to lose? Take your money anyway. So I am challenging my parking ticket next week. I'll let you know how it goes.
But well, I want to hear it.
Well, a couple of interesting things happened this week, Randy, that I think are worth mentioning right from the get-go. First of all, it's the 25-year anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. Hooray! Is that a good thing?
I would celebrate that by not feeding the meter. Just that alone would be enough.
Yes, yeah, celebrate your freedom. No, really, I was just born when the Berlin Wall fell. And so, like, when I think of, events that happened around my birth, that is one of them. So I have no conception of what life was like pre-wall fall. But I hear it was kind of a big deal. Like, they had no access to Coca-Cola or anything capitalist, and it was sort of like a little time capsule of history just living on as the rest of the world progressed. Is that true?
Well, you know, those were the least of the problems back before, you know, the fall of the Soviet Union and the wall, of course. The real thing that just was in everyone's life was the fact that most of us expected, you know, to experience a nuclear war. And I don't mean just a few nukes thrown around here or there. I mean, full blown. I mean, how long could you go without finally someone pulling the trigger? And people, you know, had fallout shelters, and each side had, so I think that there were 40 or 50,000 nuclear warheads in existence at the time, and I'm sure there are less than half of that now. I mean, as if those were small numbers. They're not. But the whole attitude, mindset, probably of everybody on Earth, I think, was different then than it is now.
How so? Would people just think, you know, they're just seconds away from dropping a nuke?
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. People don't really think that anymore. Certainly never felt that way.
No, it all went away with the Soviet Union.
Huh.
I mean, things were very different then, and you even see, you know, there are libertarians who feel comfortable today saying, oh, we're safe, we don't need a huge defense apparatus, who would admit right off the bat that they might feel differently if we were still back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And how much of a threat that was. Now, I don't really believe that, because I think the threat was real, but we were responding to one another when we talk about the two sides. And if the threat from our side, for example, had not been as great, it would probably have been lessened on the other side, and the whole thing could have de-escalated. But it didn't, and it took the actual fall of the Soviet Union to bring it about.
Hmm. I'm glad the mindset seems to have changed from one of, like, heightened fear all the time to like slightly less than that. Although maybe it's just changed, like the fear is different.
They had to change it. And you know, it's really amazing because back then we lived with the idea of total annihilation. And yet I think we had more freedom in terms of, you know, the TSA and the borders and all of those things than we have today, just because we're afraid that a dozen or a few hundred or a few thousand people, you know, might be killed in a terrorist attack. I mean, which was the bigger threat? And yet we're not freer simply because the threat is tiny compared to what it once was.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's one that I think the Berlin Wall stands as a metaphor symbolizing the different types of walls that get erected, both physical walls and the metaphorical walls around our freedom. There, I came across an article this week titled 9 Surprising Facts About the Fall of the Berlin Wall. I was wondering if I could bounce a few of these surprising facts off of you, Randy, and get your thoughts.
That. Let's see how surprising they are.
Well, the article begins, and this is from USA Today. November 9th marks the 25th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall, the iconic barrier that completely enclosed West Berlin from 1961 to 1989 and symbolized the height of Cold War tensions. Around the world, the international German community and others are marking the milestone with celebrations and shared memories. And it says that there are some artists there today and they launched some balloons and that's all happy. So, surprising fact number one. A mistake helped lead to the fall of the wall. I did not know this. The flood of East Germans and West Germans to the wall, which led to its ultimate collapse, came after East German Politburo member Gunther Schabowski on November 9th, 1989, mistakenly announced that East Germans would be allowed to cross into West Germany effective immediately, according to National Public Radio. Is that a well-known fact? Is that something that you knew, Randy?
It might have been well-known back then, but I don't remember it.
Gosh, that sounds important.
Well, you know, I don't think it was important because the fall of the wall and the Soviet Union, you know, at the end of the decade, it was coming the entire decade, and everybody could see it through the entire decade of the 80s. You had this the place where you saw it the most was in the Solidarity labor movement in Poland, and you probably heard of the leader of that, Lech Wałęsa. There were a lot of challenges to the government there, and it was led through the labor movement, but it was supported by the whole population in Poland, and they kept really beating up against the communists for the whole decade, and the thing was crumbling, you know, through the whole thing. At one point, I think, you know, that in 1978, a Polish Pope was elected, and he was a real, from a communist standpoint, a real stinker, because he came back to Poland after he was in office and stirred the people up there even more and got them going. And they beat the drum for the whole decade. And that was a point of weakening that was coming. I mean, you really could see the thing coming through the whole thing. Some people give credit to Ronald Reagan. And I don't know, I haven't thought about this completely, but he was quite the war hawk. And he kept the United States building up the military heavier and heavier. A lot of people say, the Soviet Union, they collapsed because they couldn't keep up with us. I tend to think that, well, maybe it fell sooner because the communists couldn't keep up with the capitalists, and the capitalists were building more and more weapons. But I think it was probably inevitable whether Reagan accelerated it or not.
Yeah, let's talk about that, this race between capitalism and communism that I think eventually led to the split and downfall of the Soviet Union. And is that happening anywhere else here today on planet Earth? Do you see any other empires that are sort of filling the shadow of the old Soviet Union?
Okay, well, first of all, when I say capitalism, I'm talking about as much capitalism as existed, say, in the 80s or even today. I mean, we don't really have free markets there regulated to beat the band. But to the extent that we still have somebody can offer a product and somebody else can, you know, offer a buck to buy it, you know, there's still some level of freedom in that exchange. So I guess I prefer the term free market, and in the sense of our society, as free as it is, that's how much it's helping. But what about a country like communist China, which is seemingly less and less communist? I mean, they didn't fall because they couldn't keep up. They just started adopting lots of free market mechanisms within their system. Sometimes I get the feeling that they're not as much interested in communism as they're just interested in bossing everybody around, just like rulers everywhere. And they may have figured out what, you know, we've known for a long time, that you're going to get more milk out of the cow if you, you know, let it eat all at once and be pretty free, except for the part where it has to give up the milk.
Well, this is what communism looks like to me. This is surprising fact number two. What the world saw as the Berlin Wall was actually two concrete barriers with a 160-yard death strip in between that included watchtowers, trenches, runs for guard dogs, floodlights, and tripwire machine guns. Yikes. I thought it was much bigger than that.
I did too. That's surprise number one for me.
We've got more surprising facts about the fall of the Berlin Wall on the Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Having outgrown childish libertarian fantasies, I now believe in worms! What is Libertarians Against Humanity? It's the only unofficial Cards Against Humanity expansion pack by libertarians, for libertarians, and against libertarians. Libertarians Against Humanity is free to play online, or join the Indiegogo campaign to get physical copies and other perks to play with friends or status you haven't defooed yet. Because if we don't laugh, the status win.
Not recommended for faint heart, thin skins, or those who easily rustle jimmies. Consult a physician if you experience dropped blood pressure or laughter lasts longer than 4 hours.
That's libertariansagainsthumanity.com.
Worms. Welcome back. This is the Freedom Fiends. We are rocking and rolling right along, talking about the Berlin Wall. Yeah, it's the 25th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall, the fall of communism, and the great Soviet Empire. And there are some echoes of that exist still today. And we're talking about that. We're also talking about nine surprising facts that you may not have known about the fall of the Berlin Wall. I just read one that was a little confusing. And Randy, I'd like to repeat it and we'll break it down, because I think you had a better understanding of it. Surprising fact number two. Here we go. Explain in just a second. What the world saw as the Berlin Wall was actually two concrete barriers with a 160-yard death strip in between that included watchtowers, trenches, runs for guard dogs, floodlights, and tripwire machine guns. That's what I saw, but I thought it was longer than that.
Don't you think that 160 yards refers to its width and not its length?
Oh, really? I don't know. I had no idea. I thought the width was only just like, it was like maybe 1 yard wide. Well, wasn't it just a big slab of wall?
It's too bad that Lysander Feen isn't here, because I think he was there when the wall came down.
Wow.
But I'll tell you, the impression that you always had of the wall, you know, back before it fell was, you know, this idea of having, you know, the death strip that was all covered by the watchtowers and the machine guns and the dogs and everything. Yeah, that was exactly the idea that I always had. And from the news reports and everything, there were frequently reports of someone who tried to get over the wall and around the wall and that, and, you know, they'd be machine gunned to death. And then, you know, every year or two, you know, in Reader's Digest, there would be a story about someone who made some ingenious escape, like flew over in a balloon made out of bed sheets or something, and or some homemade little airplane or dug underneath or something like that. There would be this fantastic story, and it sounded like the number of people that ever got out was just extremely small. I mean, they have so much trouble with our border fence. Apparently, people are always upset about it. They maybe ought to go talk to some of those Eastern European communists. They want to figure out how to secure a fence.
Oh, that's horrible. You know, that's a good point, though. There's something to be said that erecting a wall to keep undesirables out could sometimes be used to keep you in.
Well, in this case, that was the only purpose of it, to keep the people from the communist countries in,
right?
Not the Westerners out.
Right, but that could be a fear that I think could be legitimate, that if you build a wall, there's no telling what that wall will be used for. It might not be what you want it to be used for. And that's certainly the case in Germany. So surprising fact number three here is parts of the wall are on display for safe keeping all over the world. One section of the wall is in a men's room of the Main Street Casino in Las Vegas. Urinals are mounted on the graffiti-covered segment, which is protected by glass. And another section is in the gardens of the Vatican. If you don't feel like traveling to Italy or Vegas to see part of the wall, you can have your own little slice for as little as $10 on eBay. That's pretty amazing that these pieces of a wall can get broken down and then the market can provide to all the people around the world who want a little piece of that relic of history.
$10 for a pebble, huh?
I don't know if it's a pebble or what you get. It might have some works of art. Hey, talk about that. What about the works of art that we always saw in the Berlin Wall? Was that on both sides? Were people able to draw pictures?
I always thought it was just I thought it was on the Western side. You know, I was talking a minute ago about how they were able to secure the wall pretty successfully. You know, and while I was thinking there, it's probably a lot easier to secure a wall when you're on the same side as the people who you don't want to go over the wall. Because you're there at the wall and they have to like come past you even to get to the wall before they even try to start going over it.
Yeah.
A little different than, say, the Mexican border.
Well, is that different, really? Because they start doing those checkpoints at like 100 miles in. So they are sort of building a border on the inside of the border. Well, that's a little concerning. Hey, this is Freedom Fiends. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Hounding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
Worms. Yeah, the Berlin Wall fell. That was 25 years ago. And we're talking about it today because I think it's still important. I think there's something, there's just something to this Berlin Wall story that it strikes me these 25 years later because I think that there are, like, other walls, metaphorical walls that need to come down, or maybe that are just coming down under their own weight. And I can't quite put my finger on it. It has something to do with empires getting too big to support their own weight and then falling. But I don't know exactly who or where they are. Randy, you're helping me figure it out as we go through these 9 fun facts that you probably didn't know about the Berlin Wall.
I haven't known about it for quite a while now.
Well, and me neither. It fell before, or while I was still very young, so I really had no exposure to it when it happened. So it was all like history books stuff for me. So let's
But that history sometimes gives you a more balanced perspective looking back at it. If you live in it, there's something you get from living during the time that's very immediate, but it also probably builds in some biases that can't be shaken.
Yeah, but I still think you know more about an incident if you were there and you lived it. Like, the propaganda that I read in government textbooks, they can't have been telling the truth, as they weren't in most of the history that I read. You know, they say you know the least about the generation, like, just before you were born. I guess because there's, like, a gap in the textbooks or something. Or maybe the folks or parents don't talk about that time because it was too recent to, you know, be relevant. And but you weren't around to hear it, so you know the least about that time. I definitely think that's true for me.
When you had an American history book, say in high school or something, yeah. What year did it come up?
They'll, like, stop at Ronald Reagan, you know?
So stop at, like, Ronald Reagan. Yeah. Well, for me, they stopped at the Korean War, which was when I was born. So I guess it was about the same thing with you then.
Yeah, exactly. So my textbook stopped at about the time I was born. I learned nothing after that.
When I had history books when I was in high school, we still had pictures of, say, a gun sight on a World War II, you know, anti-aircraft gun that was blacked out, you know, for censorship, so the enemy couldn't see how we did it.
Wow.
You know what?
You don't want them stealing.
Years later.
Can't have them stealing textbooks.
No.
Well, how about this for a fun fact? A mass exodus of East Germans into West Germany, so that's the unfree section into the free section, began almost 15 years before the Berlin Wall was erected in 1961. In fact, so many left that by the time the wall went up, East Germany lost a sixth of its population. Sounds like that is the reason that the wall went up. The wall,
it seemed so, yes.
And several U.S. presidents shared a relationship. President Kennedy visited in the summer of 1963, not long before his assassination that November. He said in a rousing speech that Berlin could help the world understand the divisions between the communist and non-communist world. He was right. What else? We got the formal reunification of East Germany and West Germany did not happen until October 3rd, 1990, almost a whole year after the fall of the wall. That's not a very fun or surprising fact. We got they're running out of fun facts. This one's about Bruce Springsteen. I mean, get real, USA Today. A July 1988 concert by Bruce Springsteen in East Berlin may have led to the growing sense of dissent in the walled city that contributed to the fall of the Berlin Wall. Wow, that's a reach. The boss told the crowd in German, quote, "I've come to play rock and roll for you in the hope that one day all barriers will be torn down." Do you think he had anything to do with it, Randy?
Well, he got there after it was over, so.
No, 88.
Oh, July 88. 88.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, so he was saying, like, hey, you know, tear down this wall.
I shouldn't have left him out because he said Did he say tear down this wall before Ronald Reagan said
yes.
it?
Yes, yeah, he said it in slightly different words. And he came to play rock and roll for them, which I don't think Ronald Reagan did.
No, Ronald Reagan came there in 1987 and said, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Oh, okay. Well,
so the boss came the year later, and obviously they were waiting for the boss to come
say yes.
that, because only a year later then it came down. So there's something to that.
Here's one I didn't know. Some parts of the barrier became world famous. Checkpoint Charlie, formerly known as Checkpoint C, was the nickname that Western allies gave the best-known border crossing point between East and West Berlin. Did you hear about Checkpoint Charlie?
Everybody heard about Checkpoint Charlie.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't know.
Nobody heard about Checkpoint Abel and Baker, though.
Did anyone make it across those?
I don't even know if there was an Abel and Baker.
Hmm.
So, but, yeah, that was the one they always talked about. That was the famous one.
So here's our final fun fact. The physical demolition of the Berlin Wall was not complete until 1992. What do you think took them so long? I have no idea. Oh, I mean,
I don't know. We have a state prison that closed here in Jefferson City, you know, a dozen years ago, and they still haven't torn down all its walls. So
I would have done it myself. I would have ran up there with a sledgehammer and broken down the rest of that wall. I mean, what are they waiting for?
Well, you would have looked kind of like a dummy if there was a big hole right here and you were beating on the wall, you know, 5 feet over, when you could just walk around the corner, you know.
Oh, right. I see what you're saying. So there's no
Once they
really
had enough
destroying.
Once all of the streets that once went ran through were cleared, you know, I guess the motivation to, you know, tear down every last square inch maybe was less.
I guess so. Yeah. Yeah, I would feel kind of dumb hitting at a wall that, you know, there was an open gap in.
I think that may have been a job that could only have been done by government. So
yeah,
they had to
tear down the wall that they, I wonder how much it cost and how much time they spent, you know, building that, and compare that to, you know, how effective it was and if they had to destroy it, take it down. But anyway, I wanted to talk a little bit about that division between capitalism and communism as I've experienced it this week in a little bit of adventures. I've had the opportunity to participate in an entrepreneurial venture, Randy. This week in Keene, a new thrift store opened up in the little town of Keene, New Hampshire.
Well, that's pretty neat.
Yeah, it is pretty neat. There are a few other thrift stores.
When did it open?
Just Sunday, so 1 week ago, just tonight. And it's exciting because I think, you know, people going into business for themselves is like the heart of the market, right? People saying, what can I do to serve my friends and neighbors in my community? What can I bring them that's going to be of value to them? And can I make lots of exchanges, voluntary exchanges with my friends and neighbors to bring them value?
What sort of things are you selling?
All home goods stuff. Home goods and furniture. So there's like kitchen supplies. There's clothing and all sorts of, you know, heaters and lamps and fabrics and couches.
And are all of your papers in order?
Yeah, actually, that's been one of the challenges is, like, the business owners here, even though they're freedom people and they're porcupines, people who have moved to New Hampshire as part of something called the Free State Project, they're moving together with others who want to live in a totally free society, even though they have really strong views on independence, they want to follow all the laws because they don't want to get shut down. And one of the weird examples of this is we were putting up a sign on day one, like, all right, we're ready to open. Let's put up our sign. And it's this big monumentous occasion. I got out my video camera. Our friend is on the ladder hanging it. And right as we finish hanging the sign, a bureaucrat pulls up, literally just seconds after this sign goes up, the man hanging the sign is still not off the ladder. And a bureaucrat from code enforcement comes over and says, you can't have that sign. You can't have that.
So your papers were not in order.
Well, there's always some new surprise, which is what I'm discovering about being in business for ourselves and wading through the murky waters of government regulations. There's hundreds of pages. I mean, just the fire code is hundreds of pages. And I mean, I know how to operate a fire extinguisher. I know to put them every once in a while, put them about everywhere and then keep open flames from being exposed to things or, keeping heaters away from, it's pretty easy to not let a building burn down. I don't feel like I have to memorize 600 some pages of government regulations to be in compliance. But then the government guys show up and say, you can't have that sign. You can't have that, fill in the blank.
And too many plugs in that outlet.
Exactly. So it's been a challenge because it's hard enough to go into business for yourself and say, how am I going to bring enough value to my friends and neighbors in this community to pay for rent, to pay for employees, to pay for warehousing, storage costs, insurance, all the rest of the things that you have to consider when you're running a business. And then on top of that, to have to add to it the government regulations that just don't make any sense. Things like you can't have a sign without a permit. I just think of those things as the Berlin Wall that exists today. That's the metaphorical Berlin Wall that I'm talking about, because there's really no way to escape. Business owners, if they want to keep their lights on, they have to obey every single law that the government comes up with. And I think that's immoral sometimes. Like, maybe they should be disobeying. Maybe they should just put their sign outside and say, we don't care. Come and fine us. Come and tear the sign down if it pleases you. But we won't be bullied around. That's my bottom line.
Say, I got a question. Are there parking meters out front of your place?
Yeah.
It should be pretty easy to feed those for your customers.
There aren't any parking meters.
Oh, good.
And we'll be sure there aren't any in the future.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. Do you believe in free speech? Jay Raven had her True Shives YouTube channel taken down. We believe this censorship was wrong, and we believe the channel is a clear example of free speech. Many people are bullied on the internet, but Jay Raven actually stood up to the bullying. She has filed a self-defense lawsuit against the individuals who took down the channel. The outcome of this suit could be very important to the future of free speech. Learn more at TrueShibes.com. That's Tango, Romeo, Uniform, Sierra, Hotel, India, Bravo, Echo, Sierra.com. TrueShibes.com. Freedom.
Worms. Yeah, we are back on the Freedom Fiends talking about real freedom, independence, freed markets, and the freedom to put up a sign in your own business without bureaucrats telling you, you can't do that. You need a permit.
How much money did they separate from you and your friends to put up that sign?
I don't think we actually asked for permission to put the sign up. Instead, we decided to get around the rule. So you can't put a sign outside of your store without a permit. So instead, we put the signs in the windows. So they're inside our store. So we don't know.
Since they're inside the window, they'll never see them.
Well, the idea is that customers can still see the sign, but it's no longer outside of our business. So
seems like a reasonable idea.
Yeah, it's just a way to thumb our nose at the authorities, I think. Who cares? I mean, a sign on the outside of your business in the window. I mean, it would be nice to show off some of the merchandise and use the windows that way. But on the other hand, now their signs are backlit, and
I wonder if there would be a difference if you painted a sign on a window if it would be different if it was painted on the outside or painted on the
outside. Oh, that's a great distinction to make. Yeah, I wonder. We should paint from the inside, if, just to be sure. Yeah, there's some other cool things that have happened as a result of opening this thrift store. So let me share with you another great story of how the market brings people together who otherwise might be enemies. I do some liberty activism here in Keene, New Hampshire.
I've heard that.
Yeah, it's sort of...
In between your crime sprees.
In between, sometimes during.
During.
And it's one of the things that people do here in Keene is hold signs outside of the local jail. And the goal is to connect with the prisoners who may feel isolated, expose them to new ideas, like the idea that if there's no victim in a crime, then no real crime has been committed. Ideas like jury nullification and other ideas of freedom. So
can the prisoners see out?
Yes. Oh, some okay. prisoners can see out if they're lucky enough to be facing one of the directions from the prison. They can look out and see the cars pass by on the street. And so we park out there and hold our signs so that they, you know, sometimes I've got friends in there and I want to say, you know, free Rich Paul. He's a friend of mine who was in the local jail for standing up for his principles. But there was the property owner across from the jail. He doesn't much like that some activists use what could be arguably considered his property to do their protesting. And he comes out and sometimes, you know, waves his cane at us like an old man, you know, kids, get off my lawn sort of thing. And I can understand where he's coming from because I'm a property rights guy. I get it. You know, don't be on my property. Do things I don't want you doing.
Hell, he's still grumpy, though.
Come he's on. Great. He's a little grumpy about it. But
don't
on the
cut
other
him
hand,
that much slack, you know.
But on the other hand, you know, I'm only out there because there's this jail and it's keeping peaceful people in cages, and I think that's wrong, and you know, I want to do something good about it. So he comes in. So this thrift store, it just happens to be about a mile down the road from the jail on the same road, and this man who owns that property came into the thrift store. He said, oh, I saw this was opening up, and you know, I wanted to check it out just to show there's no hard feelings or anything. I'll buy a couple of things. He ended up buying a vacuum, a toaster, some floor mats for his car. I helped him install them. And we ended up being friends. He's come in several times since. It just
so
goes to
show
you.
So you got a friend now.
Yeah. I mean, the market really can bring people together in a way that, you know, the government can't.
And now he's not grumpy.
And now he's not grumpy. We're friends.
All right.
So it's a lesson for the kids out there. If you can't cooperate or if you're finding it difficult to make peace with your friends and neighbors, maybe you should sell them some stuff. That usually makes people happy. Find out how you can bring value to your community.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most of our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Talking about real freedom. Tear down this wall and all the other walls. not just the Berlin Wall. We're talking about metaphorical walls that exist all around us. You know, there's one, there's a metaphorical wall, Randy, in Catalonia, the Spanish province. Or maybe it's not Spanish. They claim they're not Spanish. They claim to be independent. And they want freedom. At least some of them do. Have you heard of this place?
Yes. I think I hear they're going to have an election, right?
I don't know. They're constantly talking about having an election or breaking free. The real issue is, I've never heard, maybe it exists, but I've never heard of a place being like, hey, do you want freedom? Yes. Okay. Here you go. That never has happened that I'm aware of. Has it?
Yeah. It happened in 1861.
Where?
South of the United States did that. It didn't work out very well.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so, but there's no vote held. Like, the Scottish independence thing, that was a big deal because it would have been the first time where independence was really just put up to a vote. Like, hey, do you guys want to be free? Like, yes, okay, pull this lever. And they still voted no, they don't want to be free. But if they did vote for independence, that would be the first time it was really just like a peaceful separation, right? Otherwise, there's always war involved, right?
But once they said that they wanted to be separated, whether it was from Great Britain or from Spain, I mean, the question would still come up, was the same question, you know, that came up when the Confederacy decided that they wanted to leave the United States. And that would be whether the big country was going to let them leave without a fight.
I suppose you're right. And that's the trouble with Catalonian independence right now. They participated in a, I don't know what you would call it, a visual display, a bit of, I think it's a tradition of theirs to build these human towers. And so these groups went all around Europe building these human towers, several stories high, sometimes featuring children on top, which seems pretty dangerous to me. But it's artwork, and some see it as a symbol for Catalonian independence. Got an article from the New York Times covering the story. It says, it took the child about a minute to scramble up the wobbly human tower, more than three stories tall. Paused for a few precarious seconds to steady himself before raising his hand to thunderous applause from the crowds packed into the town's main square. The spectacle was part of the festival's last month in Valls, the birthplace of the Castells, as the human towers are called in Catalan, a tradition established here in 1801 and developed out of a folkloric dance. What a weird thing. So they build these human towers. You can picture it like a pyramid. And they've been doing this apparently for over 200 years. So I guess they've got it together. They know what they're doing by now.
Haven't cheerleaders been doing it for longer than that, though?
I suppose you're right. Yep. So sometimes they use as many as 600 people and have... They can have as many as 9 or 10 tiers of participants. So they all bind their strength in an elaborate interweaving of arms and bodies. And I do see this as sort of a metaphor for interdependence. Like, I know a lot of freedom people use the word independence, and I throw that around a lot myself. But there's also something to be said for interdependence. Like, you know, specialization. There's a guy who fixes cars, and then there's the guy who grows a garden, and there's the gal who makes the bread. And, you know, people have interdependence on each other. We can be independent because each of us is specializing in the thing that we're good at. So in that way, each of these people build up their tier of their level of independence. And they were doing this all around Europe to show their, I guess, personal strength, both individually and as a country. So I'd like to see them become free, whether they build human towers or not.
Well, the human towers, obviously it's a metaphor for voluntary cooperation. I watched the video, didn't see any police holding guns on them, making them do it. But the article also said that politicians have seized upon the Castell as a metaphor for their state building ambitions. And one fellow said, one official, great structures can be built if people are united in pursuit of a clear goal. So it looks like this cooperation can cut both ways as far as freedom is concerned.
Yeah, but that politician, I don't know. I guess he's seeing what he wants to see, but as you rightly point out, there are no guns pointed at these performers. This is purely voluntary, and there are lavish parties afterwards, so there's plenty of incentive to participate and be one of these performers. So, no, it's not anything like government, because the government only builds things through violence and threatening people.
Are there no regulations? You mentioned, you know, climbing up that high. I went over to the Wikipedia has a page for the Castell. And it says accidents are rare during the construction of a Castell. However, as in bull runs, ambulances are stationed nearby in case someone needs attention.
Well, that's
apparently
good.
They have a fatality in Spain about every 20 years involving these.
Wow. So look what happens when you give people a little bit of freedom and they have to take personal responsibility. Looks like they end up doing pretty well with it. They decide.
Yeah, seems safer than driving, you know.
Statistically, yes, it does.
You know, once every 20 years, I mean, name anything that would be a lot of fun to do that would be any safer than that.
I can't imagine. I think ice skating is one of the most dangerous freedom activities that a person could engage in. Putting blades on their feet and then dancing around on slippery ice with like hundreds of others of various different ages and skill levels. It just seems like one of the most dangerous things a person could do with freedom. And yet, fatalities are often pretty low at ice skating rinks as well.
Don't give them any ideas.
Right, we don't need to overregulate those two. So, speaking of overregulation, America. It's got the largest prison population in the world, larger than the rest of the world combined. Some people are asking themselves, can prisons be abolished? You're one of these people.
Well, yeah, it's really an interesting question because, you know, first thing you think of when if we had a free society, there would be so many things that are not illegal now. I mean, that are illegal now that would not be illegal then. So even if the whole criminal justice system was exactly the same and the prisons were the same, you would have so many fewer. I think I would probably cut the prison population in half just simply, take, for example, getting rid of drug prohibition. You know, the United States has, what, 25% of the world's prisoners? That's pretty bad.
Yes,
but anyway.
And only 5% of the world's population, to put that into perspective. Yeah, I'm against the drug war, too. I'd like to see them get rid of some of these ridiculous gun laws that turn people into criminals overnight. I mean, yeah, with cannabis and other drugs, I wish that people could enjoy it, and they have to live quiet lives of hiding in the darkness.
And a pretty fair percentage of the people, especially in federal prisons, are in there for violating the gun laws.
Yes. Gun laws, driving laws, all these ridiculous rules that are anti-freedom. Like, yeah, I'm against DUIs, against people drinking and driving. Of course I'm against that. It's horribly dangerous and can kill people, and that's bad. But I'm not for ruining everyone's freedom, pulling everyone over on the side of the road, and having these DUI checkpoints that are really just anti-freedom measures.
Oh, and it's a good excuse for getting into all your other business.
Well, yeah. Oh, hey, it looks like you're out of date with your registration here. How many drunk drivers do they really catch? You know, people say, oh, if they catch one, it's worth it. Really? I mean, that's a slippery slope argument for ruining everyone's freedom.
Yeah, it's people like law and order types love to say, you know, if it saves one life, it's worth ruining a million others. You know, but, I mean, that it's just stupid.
Yeah, but they'll say that in one breath.
Who believes that?
Well, nobody, because then they don't believe it when it's their pet issue. So say it's drugs or it's drinking and driving, and they say, well, if it saves one life to pull everyone over, then it's worth it. Well, okay, maybe you don't have a problem with that, but maybe you're a person who has a gun that has 30 or so rounds in a magazine or 15 rounds or whatever, and now it gets limited in Connecticut or in New York to 10 rounds or 7 rounds. Or, oh, now your gun's illegal and you're a criminal. I mean, would the same apply, saying, well, hey, if it saves one life to take these magazines away from people, it was worth it, right? To crack down on your freedom, to take that away. Absolutely not.
We just don't believe it.
I don't.
But
buy it.
Yeah, the gun laws. You know, over half of all the prisoners in federal prisons are on drug offenses. More than half of them. And if you throw in the state prisons, which have more prisoners than the federal system, 25% of all prisoners are in there for drug offenses specifically. But if you also remove all of the people that are in prison due to the effects of prohibition. And now we're talking about a lot of murders and assaults, burglaries, and all of these things that grow out of the illegality of the drug trade.
Hmm.
I mean, burglaries, you know, if it costs 10% as much to feed your drug habit, you're not very likely to have to burglarize a house to feed it. I mean, even an alcoholic, since alcohol's legal, you know, can still find a $3 drunk, and they don't have to burglarize houses to get a buzz on.
Fair point.
And yeah, and the same thing would happen if you got rid of prohibition, the prices would be so low that you wouldn't have to go to those lengths, because it is dangerous to burglarize homes. If you didn't have to do it, you wouldn't do it.
Yeah, and it's expensive to hide from the government. So,
yeah, but there's a lot of drug traders
wouldn't do it.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
Can prisons be abolished? That's the question we're asking here on the Freedom Fiends with Derek J. Warrant Canary and Randy England Wampus Cat.
I'm back too.
I thought you were going to give us a little Wampus Cat.
Oh. I'll give you one when you're not expecting.
Okay, it's that kind of sound bite. Well, we're asking this question because I think the U.S. can't continue to incarcerate people in the numbers that it's been. Eventually, everyone would end up in jail. I don't know. I don't know if that's a true statement or not.
You told me that some people want to be in jail.
Ooh, isn't it true? It's so scary. So, just some backstory. I spent some time in jail in 2012 and 2011. And they were for crimes involving no victims. Things like video recording in City Hall or trespassing on court property. By standing on the sidewalk. And so while I was in jail, I got to mingle with other inmates and learn a little bit about what it's like to live your life on the inside, as they call it. And it's very real, the term institutionalization. People get institutionalized, and what that means is they start to accept this as their new reality, that they belong in jail. Yeah, they become domesticated to jail life or to prison life. So much so that, like, life on the outside is just too difficult or too unfamiliar or too uncomfortable that sometimes they'll just go out and commit another crime just so they can end up back in jail and be home again. But anyway, one of the people who I ran into that was like this was my cellmate, who for the last 8 of the last 10 years he had spent in prison. And I was having a conversation with him about the idea, about this very idea: could prisons be abolished? I happen to be of the opinion that they're not necessary, that people, human beings, do not belong in cages, and that it's not a good way to solve complex social problems. He disagreed and got really emotional about it. And I can imagine that's because it would be a huge shock to a person's system to realize that 8 of the last 10 years of their life had been stolen. That it wasn't retribution or restitution wasn't being made. No wrongs were being righted. No justice had been served. It was just immoral. And he had a real problem with that. He got angry, and others agreed. Others said, yeah, we belong here. We should be here. There should be jails. We have to lock up the dangerous people. So why are they wrong, Randy?
Well, why did he think that he belonged there? What had he done?
He was a thief. He stole because he wanted more heroin.
Okay, that's, well, I guess, you know, you want to back up to first causes in that. Would he actually have even been a thief if heroin had not been a controlled substance?
Probably not.
He probably wasn't committing these crimes because he was under the influence of the drug. He was probably committing the crimes because he wanted to be under the influence of the drugs, because he was not under the influence of the drugs. Does that seem right to you?
Well, I think with heroin, you're still under the influence of the drug when you're going through withdrawals. And, you know, the same with alcohol or any other drug.
You do it to get it, but what I meant by the drug is that his behavior was in no way irrational or insane.
It was rational in that he was pursuing more heroin.
But if he had had plenty of heroin, he would never have been committing the burglaries.
Correct. Yes, I believe that to be true. Yeah,
and that, so he wouldn't
be, and so he wouldn't be a criminal in the sense that he wouldn't have created any victims. He wouldn't be stealing from anyone. He might be harming himself, and we could see a problem there. But I don't think it's worth jailing people over.
Well, but first of all, he probably wouldn't have been there at all if it hadn't been that. But as it stands, though, he really was a thief. And it's his fault that he stole. When I say get rid of prohibition, you would cut down on the burglaries, I don't mean to take away the fault or culpability of the thieves. They're still guilty too. But there is such a thing as a society doing things that take away the incentives to burglarize homes.
Yeah,
and that would be something that could be done. But whether he would have been a thief or not, it turns out he was a thief. What happens to restitution? Wouldn't that be more appropriate?
That's what I want to know. I mean,
we should talk about that. Just
does he make this right with the people who he stole from by serving time in a cage?
No, it goes the other way. His victims have to pay for it.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the radios. And I guess it says worms now. So there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and 2 designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out.
LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Calming the hamster in your brain. Welcome back. This is Freedom Fiends. Tasing you with liberty and hopefully calming the hamster in your brain. We're talking about alternatives to incarceration. How do we whittle down the number of the incarcerated here in America and around the world? I want more freedom. That means freedom from cages. So, what do we do, Randy? We were talking about a cellmate of mine who was a real criminal. He caused a victim by committing the crime of theft, stealing property from another person. So, how do we make restitution? It's not by sitting in a cage. As you rightly point out, that only makes the victim suffer further because they have to pay for his time and in a cage. Well,
the problem is we don't have them pay restitution except in some very rare instances when a court sentences someone to pay restitution. Usually it's in conjunction with a probation. The person will be out, they'll be working a job, but then the only thing that they pay for in the restitution will be, oh, say the amount that they stole from you or the amount that your hospital bill was. I mean, you're not even going to get your lost wages. You're not going to get the other expenses, the time, the trouble, the, just all of the expenses that go into being a victim of a crime. So restitution, it's almost never ordered. And when it comes to your friend who was sentenced to jail, they never order restitution for people that are going to jail. And so one thing that would solve a whole lot of problems, including helping to empty the jails out, would be a justice system that was victim-oriented, which it's not now, and that means making victims whole. And I think that would also have the effect of, rehabilitating the people that are committing the crimes, too. You know, they talk about you going to jail, and they say you served your sentence, and now you've paid your debt to society.
Yeah, as if.
Yeah, he paid your what? Paid your debt to who? I mean, the government got their pound of flesh, but nothing else happens.
And really, what sort of... Some people use jail as an opportunity for self-discovery. Sometimes they discover religion. But oftentimes, I think more often than not, it's just people sitting around, wasting their lives. They're not growing or developing or changing. They're not paying any sort of debt to society. They're playing children's games and eating three meals a day. I mean, that's it.
Well, some people have suggested that in the prisons, if there were prisons, and we're not settling the issue of whether there should be any prisons or not, but assuming there was someone that had to be in a prison or someone who, say, did commit a serious crime, property crime, where they owed a lot of money and the judge might give them the opportunity to pay that off over time in payments. But if somebody just said, I won't do it, or they won't make the payments, or for some reason they don't, some justice system decided, well, if you don't pay it voluntarily on the outside, we're going to put you in a workhouse, which would be very startlingly like a jail from the standpoint of that you can't leave, and you're going to work, and you'll be paid market wages. And out of your pay will come your room and board. And then out of that will come your, no, out of your, I would say out of your wages would come first. The restitution would come out, then your room and board. So if you didn't earn enough, you might end up eating bread and water. I don't know. But if you could work more, you could end up having some nicer things, like pay off your debt sooner and get out sooner, or make more money and have a nicer room to stay in, or better food, or whatever, or save a nest egg for when you got out. I mean, there's lots of things that you could do, but it would have to be a market wage. Not these things where people nowadays, the companies that contract with federal private prisons to pay somebody 30 cents an hour to do something, that's just crazy. And I think there's people that must be getting obscenely rich on a scam like that. But it wouldn't have to be that way.
Your prison sounds pretty good. I might sign up. If I had committed a crime, I think I would volunteer to do time at your prison over any other, because getting paid, there are some benefits. You know, do you think there could be a market for competition among prisons?
Well, that would be, if there would be the way to work it out, as people suggested, and none of this is my thought. I haven't had any creative ideas on it, but there are people who've suggested that you would have different prisons, and one would advertise, we pay the highest rates, or we're the IT prison, and we pay highest wages to criminals who have an IT background, and instead of outsourcing to India, they outsource to that prison.
Boy, that's
and they
brilliant.
Make really, really good money, and you could go to different places. And or you could select different plans while you were in there for a quicker payoff, maybe more leisure time, maybe less. Maybe you just want to work 65 hours a week and get this thing done very quickly. I don't know. And like I said, these solutions, whatever, how those would work out, they assume that there would be some kind of a prison. I'm not sure that everybody agrees with the idea that you would have prisons at all, or at least prisons that would fulfill the purpose of paying off restitution. You know, it's kind of a debtor prison sort of thing, right?
Well, I can't imagine there would be prisons in the sense that there are like armed guards keeping you in a cage. Like, if they were like the prisons like what you're talking about, it sounds like people would be motivated internally. They would have enough incentive to say, I want to opt into this situation. I want to come to this prison and work there. Maybe they go home at the end of the day and they know that if they don't return the next day, you know, there's going to be problems, or they won't, I don't know, there will be some sort of natural consequence.
If they don't return the next day, they won't go home the next night.
Right, that could be.
Or they would be able to have leave every week on the weekend. Or the conditions could be as mild as they would be. And you know how some things are, you would, if you're on a diet, you might say, just don't put that food in front of me. I'll be okay if you take away the temptation. Yeah, you might volunteer for a program that would make you keep working. Maybe you're the kind of person who has a hard time disciplining yourself. But if you have to be in the same spot on the same day, every day, and you're in a situation where it never changes, you might get it done. So, you know, you could have places where the doors weren't locked, but it would be enough of a psychological coercion or something that you would stay and you would do it. The problem comes in is that where you have somebody who wouldn't stay, and you had to lock the doors, and maybe they're violent and you had to do more than lock the doors. Maybe you had to have guards. I mean, it can get to a point where it just looks like prison, right?
Yeah, but there were lots of those types of people at the jail where I was, and I don't think they belong there either. So, for example, there was one man who clearly had some mental problems, and he was screaming and banging on the door of his jail cell, trying to get the attention of the guards and saying nasty things to people as they walked by, you know, really having a hard time, struggling with being in the cell, not understanding why he was there. And the guards came in on a pretty regular basis to come storm the cell, rough him up, throw some pepper spray in his eyes, and make him shut up. And that's not a solution for these violent people who, you know, there's got to be another way. I know it sounds weak to offer no solution in particular and say, oh, the market will take care of it. You know, there are going to be companies that will incentivize people to do the right thing and stop being violent and become responsible. But really, that's what I'm advocating is remove the violence, remove the force, the coercion that puts people like this man in the cage. And I really believe things will work out. And it's not just some blind faith thing that I believe it. I'm just like, oh, I just believe it will work out. The incentives are there. You know, people want a peaceful, free society, free from violent thugs.
Okay, but say you're the burglar who stole the TV set and you broke in the house, took the nice TV. They ended up catching you. They took you in before the court, the arbitration agency, whatever it was. You know, it was probably the security company that was working for your victim's insurance company, right?
Yes.
And they bring you in and they accuse you of this and say, we're going to have a trial and you can defend yourself if you want, or you don't even have to come if you don't want. But at the end, there's going to be a judgment one way or the other. And then you get to the end and the judge says, yeah, he did it. And, you know, you might appeal that, but when it gets to the next level or appeal it to your arbitration and they say, yeah, he did it. And in the end, they say, you did it. And the restitution on this is going to be $10,000. And they look at you and you don't have a record, or, you know, you look like you could work. So they say, well, if you're willing to pay this off, then we'll just put you on a payment plan and you've got a job, do it. And then you don't do it and you never pay anything. What should they do with you next?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
I don't know. They can't paddle you.
And paddling you is not going to help the victim either. The only thing that's going to help, he's out $10,000. Okay.
Yeah.
So how are you going to make this right with the victim? Now, I can respect the idea that you would just say, well, if he won't pay, then it's over. He just...
Well, what about idea of, like, blacklisting people? Is that
exactly
is that where you go with that?
No one will ever deal with Derek J. Freeman again. He is banned, and nobody in their right mind. Have you ever read a story called... it's a fantastic story called And Then There Were None by... Eric Frank Russell.
I'm not sure I have. Can you?
It's a short story, and it's about this society way out in space, science fiction, where men show up there, you know, centuries later and find this colony has grown up that's basically just anarchist. There is no government, and they have a system of, it's kind of a barter system where they have, like, credits that they, you know, have with each other. And they had in that story, they the guys from Earth say, well, how do you get people to go along with that? And they say, well, we should tell you the story of Idle Jack. And it's a story that they tell little children to scare them into being responsible citizens.
Uh-oh. So how do we reach that free and peaceful society of the future? Through fear or incentives?
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Here, talking about freedom, human freedom, human towers, thrift stores, the fall of the Berlin Wall, and prisons. How do we wrap it all up in this final segment, Randy England?
Well, the story of Idle Jack is the story of how you get by without prisons.
Okay.
Without any prisons at all.
Lay it on me, man.
This was the story that people told on this world out far, far away from here.
This anarchist society, right?
A fellow named Idle Jack, and he came to Earth, you know, as a baby into this new world and everything. And he decided, since people took care of him when he was little, that he wasn't ever going to work and become what they call a scratcher. And that's somebody who just lives by, they call it accepting obs or obligations. But basically, it's a system of credits where you would go in and get lunch, and then you would owe that guy something. And each place, you know, you went and got something, they would, if there were obligation credits you could spend, or if you didn't have any to spend, they would have credits against you, and it worked that way.
Oh, so sort of like the old tale of, oh, you go into a diner and you don't have enough money to eat, so they make you wash dishes.
Yeah, but he's a guy who takes everything, gives nothing in return, and this went on for him fine up till the time he was 16, and he got away with it because he was just a kid, and kids, you know, aren't expected to make their way on their own, you know, until they get older. But when he turned 16, he continued, you know, being a loafer, but ended up getting these debits all around town until everybody everywhere, you know, he owed them money, and eventually people stopped giving him stuff and said, no, you know, until this is paid off. And it went on. Everything dried up. Everywhere that he went, the people just said, I'm not giving you anything more. No meals, no clothes, no company, no entertainment, nothing. They wouldn't give him anything, like he was a leper, eventually. And some people obviously were nice to him longer than others, but eventually everybody ended up not doing anything, and he ended up burglarizing places and that, and nobody did anything. They didn't do anything to him. They just left him alone, but they banished him completely, in the sense that no one would talk to him, no one would give anything to him. And what he ended up doing was moving on to the next town. And of course, he did that in that town, and then people eventually wouldn't have anything to do with it, wouldn't help him. And he went on to the fourth, fifth, finally to the 20th town. And, you know, it was starting to get pretty tough, and the towns in this place were kind of small. And it finally reached a point he couldn't even get to the next town before they already heard about him.
Oh, no.
And he lasted like 2 weeks in the 25th town, 8 days in 26th town, 1 day in the 27th town, and that was almost to the end of it. And he knew he'd be recognized the moment he showed his face in the next town. And absolutely, totally at the end of his rope. He could not go anywhere. So he took off into the open country, ended up living like an animal, eating roots and berries and stuff. And then finally, he disappeared, and then eventually one day some walkers were out, found him swinging from a tree. This is the story that they told the kids in this world. And he was in rags and completely ruined, and ended up just in complete loneliness and neglect. And he just did it to himself. And that, they said, you know, that was Idle Jack, the scratcher, and he wasn't even 20 years old. Now, that could be, you know, the solution, you know, for many, many people. You wouldn't have to do anything to them at all. And that gets rid of most of the rest of the people that are in the prisons. Now, there's one class left that I don't know what we do about, and that's the violent ones, the murderers, you know. Where do we go with them?
Well, I think, just as you pointed out, the natural incentives that Idle Jack faced, there would be natural consequences for people who are violent, wouldn't there?
And so you think even if a murderer was willing to pay his own way, a murderer is so bad, people would banish him whether he had money or not.
I think they would do more than banish the murderer. I think the victims, or the family of the victims of the murderer, would take care of business, if you know what I mean.
That sounds worse than prison.
Well, we haven't figured out the whole private justice thing quite yet.
Not quite.
There's still more that we've got to figure out as we're building this path to a free and truly free society, one that takes personal responsibility seriously. Well, I want to thank you tonight, Randy. You've inspired me and helped calm the hamster in my brain.
Good to be with you on the Fiends.
Yeah, man. I hope we've done the same for you. you avoid prison and all the Berlin walls that are around us. Find the hole through which freedom can escape and jump through it.